This is an ABC podcast.
You're listening to Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia.
It's warrior music. And if you listen to power metal these days, you know, the warrior influences from the past just creep in.
When you think of the music scene in the Pacific, what springs to mind? It's usually beautiful, breezy, tropical beats, right? Well, what about heavy metal? From the ferocious vocals to loud guitars, metal is a perfect way to let out your frustrations. But the songs are more than just music to practice your headbanging to. They've come from a place of resistance. I'm Seyuli Salama Sina von Reiki, and this is Culture Compass, an exploration of survival, revival, and connection throughout the Pacific. It's safe to say that metal is a genre full of passion. But how did it find its way into the Pacific? Papua New Guinea is a growing hotspot for metal, but no one knows the scene there better than journalist and music lover Scott Whitehead.
A lot of the influences for heavy metal were around Port Moresby, Bougainville especially, because you had a lot of mine workers coming to Bougainville, bringing their own tastes of music. So we had bands like Cirrhosis, which did covers of rock bands all over the world. So their kind of music spread out of Bougainville. Initially, people did a lot of covers of rock bands. Out of the highlands, we had bands like the Wagi Hellcats. Wagi Hellcats was fronted by a man called Pet Siwi. So they're in their 60s and 70s now, you know, all those people. So they were the rock stars at the time.
So why do you think they were doing covers during the earlier years?
I guess it was just new, you know. Music instruments were expensive and people were just learning. And this post-colonial period where the parents of those people who played covers were playing string band music in the villages with acoustic guitars, and then suddenly they moved to towns and they were settled in towns, got jobs, and the children were growing up in that era and the children were listening to very different music and trying to emulate what was being played from American and Australian bands. So it was that period again, that post-colonial period when people were playing covers. And this generation that's playing metal in the underground are the grandchildren of that cover-playing generation. So three generations in one span. So you can just simply tie the music to each generation.
My brief encounter of heavy metal during my teenage years was a very interesting part of my life. But what is it about the style of the music that makes it so popular?
It's warrior music. And if you listen to power metal these days, you know, the warrior influences from the past just creep in. So younger Papua New Guineans, younger Pacific Islanders are drawing on their tribal heritage and then infusing that into the music. I've seen also Afro-metal experiences out of Africa. And that you can see the tribal influences just going directly into heavy metal music. And people are, I guess their parents are confused how to treat that experience that they're seeing. It's no longer covers of music that's popular. No, they're creating their own and creating new genres as they go along.
What stories are bands usually telling through their lyrics?
I guess there are three stages to it. The 70s to the 80s, they were doing covers, trying to emulate what was being done out of America primarily. And then with the rise of new metal and other influences, you know, Linkin Park, Slipknot, all those influences, that was one period in the 90s. I kind of lost track because it all sounded the same. And towards the late 90s, we had bands, they had a very 80s feel to the guitars. We hadn't gone to that power metal stage yet, but they were straight after the Bougainville crisis. And a lot of bougainvillean bands were talking about peace. They were talking about the troubles that they were facing, the difficulties that the province was going through. And it was looking for that glimmer of hope after the crisis. But the children from that generation, because their dads had just come out of the crisis, they listened to a lot of heavy metal music. The children who grew up in that era seeing and watching their dads play and listen, well, moms and dads listen and play, those are the ones who are actually creating this new wave of music and articulating a whole new genre of music out of Papua New Guinea. Very original with some influences. But that's what we're seeing now. And it's very encouraging to see new musicians come out now.
Could you paint a picture of what the metal scene is like now in Papua New Guinea?
It's mind-blowing. It's really exciting. I've seen it develop and then kind of lost track in between, like after university for a period of 10 years. And then just last year, actually, I posted something about my favorite bands. And then people started sending me links of Papua New Guinean metal bands. And it was mind-blowing just listening to the proficiency of their playing, the quality of the music. And then people started linking me to other bands around the Pacific, like the Solomon Islands. It was an interesting experience just listening to all of that and trying to review one after another and seeing that there were children of people who actually listened to heavy metal in the 80s and 90s. So interesting development.
The genre seems to resonate strongly with the people of Bougainville. Why is that?
There have been, in my view, several stages to it. So the first part was the influences from mine workers that brought the music into Bougainville. And then the post-crisis period where people were just finding their voice, looking for that avenue to rage, I guess, and to express it in a creative manner. And the softer music just didn't work for many people. Many people had a lot of, you know, so much that they needed to say, that they had to say it. Now, the interesting thing, I think the catalyst that has triggered this rise of heavy metal music, I guess the resurgence of heavy metal music in the mid-2000s was the demise of recording studios. Because if you've studied that trend in Papua New Guinea, we had heavy metal in the 70s and 80s. It just wasn't promoted enough because recording studios felt that they couldn't sell the records if artists recorded heavy metal music. And the earliest metal sounding artists were people like George Telek, John Warabat. And if you listen to their old records, it's mind-blowing the workmanship that went into their records.
How was it for metal music and the fan base being underground?
I've spoken to a few of my friends who are musicians who play guitar. They're really, really good. And a lot of them don't want to record. Whenever there's an opportunity to get together and jam, we'll do it. But go out and actually record, yeah, but maybe later. So that's the kind of discussions that we keep having. And a lot of them are in no rush to record. They'll happily play live with others who are like-minded. I feel that it's a statement that many of them are making, that we really don't need the system to dictate what we do and how we do it. And we will play music on our own terms. And if people like it, they come and listen to it. If they don't like it, then it's tough. So that's why the fan base is quite small and dedicated. But slowly, slowly, you can see that there's a lot of people interested in it. They're exploring, they're asking questions. And once they see them play live, they're blown away by the talent.
Has it changed much over the years since it became popular?
Yeah, the style of playing, the style of music is way, way different because a lot of bands are looking towards, you know, that power metal influence that coming out of Europe, Scandinavia, Finland, Sweden, all that. So it's, I guess, harder to play and it gives them more challenge. It's no longer the bands like Europe and, you know, the 80s rock metal scene, the glam rock type that people want to seek. They're looking at influences out of Europe. Russian bands, Finnish bands. The Swedes have a lot of influence.
So have you heard of any bands weaving traditional instruments into their sound?
There was one link that somebody sent to me, and he called it bamboo metal, straight out of Bougainville, and it had bamboo bands playing with heavy metal guitars. So that was a curious fusion. I couldn't get enough of it. I played it over and over. So I've been trying to define the kind of heavy metal that Papua New Guineans are playing, and I called it Kanaka metal because it kind of defines that fusion that we're seeing. Very heavy power metal, Swedish influence, Scandinavian type influences, very fast guitars, sweep picking, and then the bamboo band in the back.
How would metal compare to other popular genres in PNG like reggae? Is it in the mainstream and is it being played on the radio much?
Not much on the radio. And that's the beauty of it. That's what defines heavy metal in Papua New Guinea. It's all underground and the fans are underground. So it's not like we've got large communities that go out and have the merchandise to show and the following and the airtime on radio. It's very, very different. A lot of it is underground. There are various age groups. It's a beautiful niche to watch in Papua New Guinea. So you've got people in their 40s and 50s, gray-haired, playing in bands. And then you've got the youngsters who gather in nightclubs with, you know, very organized concerts for very small numbers of people, but very dedicated.
Why do you think metal resonates with PNG music lovers?
There's a lot of anger, and it's directed at the government, directed at the economic situation. People are slowly finding their voice in this genre. Reggae music has always had a purpose and a following in Papua New Guinea. It has primarily been because of, you know, influences out of Jamaica, out of Africa, and, you know, the social movements in those spaces. And people are slowly finding that it also resonates with us. Heavy metal is also finding its voice, and people are finding that they can direct a lot more anger through that music compared to reggae music, perhaps. So people are slowly finding that voice.
So would it be right to say that a lot of younger generations are now sharing and exchanging their music on social media?
Yeah, with the demise of recording studios, people have come out and they're not mentally bound to this idea that you need a recording studio now, because the tech is already available. The tech is cheaper compared to what their dads and mom's generation had to deal with. You had to go through a recording studio. You had to record and then it would be marketed. And if the recording studio said that you couldn't sell it, then of course you had to give up your dreams. But this group, they're not bound by that. So if they need a video clip shot, they just call up a mate to shoot the video clip and then edit it at home. They just do a backyard recording and then it's still as good as a recording studio. And then they release it on Facebook or YouTube or TikTok. And if it gets the views and people like it, then they get requests for live performances. So it's a whole new period.
To understand why this genre is catching on, we have to travel to the metal capital of the Pacific, Bougainville. This island punches above its weight when it comes to gigs and festivals, showcasing the best heavy metal that Melanesia has to offer. And Masi Hanga, a local music promoter, thinks it all comes down to the passion of the local fans.
We were so much influenced by the expatriates that came in to work at the Panguna mine that time, the biggest mine in Papua New Guinea. When the people came in, the expertise came in, they started influencing us with, you know, their music, the way of dressing, the lifestyle, and all those things. But people see bougainvilleans that we are just metal. It's just there. They see bougainvilleans as metalheads by just looking at it.
And so what's the metal scene like there now?
The metal scene here is not really like before, because it's the influence from outside music. Now people came to know the other genres. And we also got the younger ones who are not into the tradition of listening to metal anymore. They have their own choice of what they listen to. I'd say from my own experience, my observation is metal is dying out in Bougainville now, but we have it inside of us, but it's not being promoted like before.
Yeah, so it's kind of shifted again since it started. So you're currently booking and promoting bands in Bougainville. What's involved in that?
I used to run small rock shows, to do fundraising, just to do marketing, logistics. And the main idea behind that in promoting and organizing shows in Bogan, because it wanted to bring back the taste of heavy metal, the rock and roll, and, you know, also promoting local bands and in showcasing their talents, because we have bands, we have younger generations who play their love metal, but they're not coming out. They're looking for ways and who they could go to in helping them to come out from where they are, you know, showing their talent. So my main aim and goal was to promote the raw talents in Bougainville, especially the local metal bands in Bougainville.
You helped with the organizing of the Metal United Worldwide Festival in Port Moresby. That sounds huge. What was it like organizing it?
Oh my gosh, I can't remember that. It was just me and my friend Kamel. It was just out of the blue. We just came up with $100 each, bought bread, and then we just started meeting. We were just walking around the street selling these things just to make money, just to come up with a 1,000 kina capital just to pay for venues. And it was very challenging for me, but it was the love of metal that pushed me. And it's the first time that, you know, you have to, you know, show up a lot in, even when you don't have any support. Like, we didn't literally have any support in doing, but it was challenging for me, but we pulled through.
From your experience, are the fans mainly wanting to see local bands?
We have fans who come to watch their favorite local bands. For example, if we have Aquafire is the boys from Bougainville. And most of the boys are from Bougainville. So when Aquafire goes up in stage, on the stage to play, everybody shows up. Yeah, we just love supporting the local bands. Yeah, we don't have a favoritism, which band we favorite. It's just pure metal.
Is metal growing more popular in different countries around the Pacific?
In Papua New Guinea, yes, it is growing. It is the metal community, the metal bands, and we are very supportive of each other. And it's growing, and it's still going to grow. And we have said that we have a community that's growing, but only when we have the support that we elect from our government. But the thing is, in Papua New Guinea, yes, metal is growing, and everybody is supportive of each other.
And who are the bands that you are excited about at the moment?
For the Pacific bands, I was really excited to bring in the Shepherd Rains, the boys from Samoa, I guess. I would really love them to come to Bougainville. I would really love them. But for the locals, we have so many local bands. We have so many metal bands in Bougainville and in PNG as well, in Port Moresby. In Bougainville, we've got Conscience, we've got Doomsvein, we've got Warheads. We've got Mortal Revenge. They've been far up there from the other bands that just joined in as the local bands from Bougainville.
What do you think the fans love most about coming to the shows that you organize?
Because of the music, the fans just love the raw talent. It's not like every day we have metal shows. So when I organize a show, it's like everybody just show up. Because there's nobody organizing a show like this. So it's like, they said, we want to come to your show because we don't have this every day or every month or every year. It just comes in once in a while, which I organize shows. In Port Moresby, we organize shows like after a year or two, and then fans show up. It's not always we have metal shows in the country and in Bougainville.
Awapa'au Filiva'a and Oliver from Auckland-based Samoan band Shepherd's Rain fuse their Samoan language and traditional culture with metal. Behind the raw energy of Filiva'a's voice, their songs tell of love, loss, and even ancient mythology.
My name is Awapa'au Filiva'a James, and I'm the singer for the band.
My name is Oliver, and I play guitar
and do some of the production of the band.
Awapa'au, can you tell me about that choice to sing in your language rather than English?
I guess one thing, it's a point of difference. You know, every band out there needs to find their one unique thing about them, and that'll help them sort of grow in the music world. And I'm not only that, but I'm just really proud to be Samoan or to be a Pacific Islander. And what better way to have my little input to the culture than by singing in our language, in a genre that's definitely not part of our Pacific Island upbringing. You know, it's very weird, it's very unique, but it works. And the harshness of metal goes well with the warrior-like ancestry and stories of our people.
I'd imagine you'd be able to let out some aggression when you're singing. What kinds of messages are your songs about?
Many things, many songs. In this new album, there's a lot of stories that have been told, like Nafanua, the goddess of war in Samoa. There's also personal experiences, and there's another song which is all about trying to get the world woke about this whole domestic violence thing going on. You know, I lost my sister to domestic violence, and that song's all about her, and it just shows everyone the anger and that I had in me. A lot of other stories, like just things about depression, loss, if Oliver doesn't mind me speaking about it. It's Oliver lost his son, and one of our songs is about that. So it's a lot of different things. There's even a song in there about love, our first love song we've ever written, in our own little special way. So yeah, many different subjects we talk about in this new album.
I'm very sorry about both of your losses. I can relate to that. How do you write your songs when you're singing about culture? Do you each share parts of your own story and collectively put it together?
That's pretty much all me, but I always ask the band whether they like it or not before starting to write about it. So I just give them a subject, and then they'll be like, wow, that's pretty cool. Like, let's go with it, you know? Like when I wrote about my sister passing away, you know, they questioned and asked if, you know, are you sure you want to do that? And I said, yeah. It's something that many artists are afraid of doing, bringing out that side of their lives, bringing forward like subjects that people are real uncomfortable talking about. And I love to challenge myself and to try to bring that side out, bring the darkness out, so that you can bring that darkness out to the light. And a lot of it will help a lot of people.
I have another appreciation now for Nafanua as you explain this, which makes me appreciate it even more. Thank you. Do you incorporate any traditional Samoan instruments into your sound?
Mainly the bakia drum. We've been incorporating that in our music for a number of years now. Yeah, that's the main instrument. There's not too many kind of traditional instruments that would come from the bakia drums, apart from, of course, a lot of our music's vocal. I guess that's other kind of less direct traditional influences. I feel he does add a lot of vocal harmonies, and the way he adds in harmonies is kind of informed by his traditional music upbringing. There's that as well. But yeah, definitely the bakia drums found adds a real nice touch to the music as well. Like just the sound of it, the tone of that drum, when you combine it with the metal instrumentation as well, gives a kind of a more of a haunting sound, we find. So we always find in nice places to add that in.
It does, and I appreciate that sound too. I picked it up when I was listening.
And even the rhythms are really interesting rhythms in that traditional music that we try to draw on as well. Just get new kind of sounds or rhythmic feels they might not always find in traditional metal music.
Mm. My Lord. It all seems to work out nicely. The sound of the pake and with the guitars as well. I really enjoyed that. I'm really curious about this one. Have you played your songs in Samoa yet?
Yes, just recently.
Yeah,
right, you can deliver.
That's interesting, eh?
How did that feel? Was it a special experience?
Definitely was.
I think especially for me, Oliver and Joe, who are the Samoans in the band, probably it still is the most special gig that I've done ever, really. You know, just to make songs and then having the opportunity to take them back to your homeland, it's like, it's perfect. It's exactly what you want. But it was kind of scary at first.
I know it's a special interview when I start getting goosebumps and the shivers go up and down my spine. It would have been very special for you. How was that received by the fans over there?
Surprisingly good, yeah. Because I was confused. I didn't know I know how our oldies are, our old people are, and how our people can be at times. And, you know, I was just standing there. First word I screamed out, and I was just waiting for Allah to come my way. But they loved it. They cheered us on. The kids loved it. And again, it's just an amazing experience.
The first one was at we got a slot on the Tuwila Festival. And I just remember that the kids said, the way it was set up, we had the main crowd all sitting around the edge, but there was a big group of kids sitting right up the front. And I bet they would have not heard or expected anything like us coming on, because they had a few traditional island bands before us, and then we jumped on. Our first song starts with the Sa Sa, so we did that. And I just remembered that that's actually the first gig we've done where we've played that song, Ainga. There's the Sa Sa at the beginning. And then the kids all did it straight away because they knew what to do. That was a cool memory. Yeah, they got into it. They started jumping up and down. And there's we've got footage of some of the kids headbanging.
With their hair out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there many other bands playing heavy metal there?
No, they're not. But there are many fans, especially the old folk there. I think it's the seasoned folk. They love their rock. They seem to know a lot about that side of music. The young ones were pretty much just getting into it. Something new for them. But I think it's the oldies. The oldies knew a lot of rock and songs and bands that we listened to as well. And we had a chat with a lot of them. They were there after the show. And they were talking about bands that we actually listened to as well. So that was cool to know.
Yeah, I remember that too. There's definitely an audience for the oldies or just kind of music fans that are into live music, and especially live bands, which they probably don't get as much in Samoa just because it's in the islands. So we had a lot of people that came to our show that were just in particular kind of heavy metal fans, but just fans of live music and bands and old school music. Quite a few guitarists came out.
What is it about the style of metal that connects with you?
For me, one element is that I just love the power of it, like coming from what I started doing. It's a nice contrast, just kind of playing loud and fast kind of loud music. It's a nice, like we mentioned before, it's a great release when you're performing it.
I think for me, it's more I can go and be myself on stage. Like that's on stage, I just become a totally different person than what I actually am in person. But it's sort of another side to me that can only come out on stage, and I love it. This is just one way to express my anger, my thoughts, it's just a really good way to express myself. I think that's what I love about metal, and that's how it connects with me. Metal, there's no limit. In metal, you can scream as loud as you want. You can play as hard as you like. You know, bang your head as hard as you want. It's so unique from every other genre in the world. It's just one of the most craziest genres out there, and I think that's what I love about it.
It's exciting to hear a growing, fresh generation of metalheads echoing the intensity of our ancestral warrior chants and telling stories of day-to-day resilience and resistance. Music has always been a tool for expression, so whether it's singing about goddesses of war or unleashing primal energy in the mosh pit, heavy metal seems to be igniting a fire within us all. This is Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia. Culture Compass is hosted by me, Seyuli Salamasina von Reiki. Our ABC Radio Australia executive producer is Falangafulu Inga Stunsner. From Deadset Studios, our producer is Lucy McAfee. Supervising producer is Grace Pashley, and our executive producer is Rachel Fountain. Audio editing and sound design by Nick McCorriston. This episode was produced on the lands of the Turrbal, Jagera and Dhurrumbal people. We pay respects to their elders, past and present.